We did speak 4 weeks ago, just after, a couple of weeks after this began. We talked about the situation in Iran, and I do want to talk to you about that, obviously. But you will have heard what the UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer said this morning about how the UK needs to tackle anti-Semitism, and about how anti-Semitism training must go into schools and the NHS and Holocaust education training and all of this stuff. Sounded very authoritarian, some might say very fascistic. I want to double down on something, and I know if I'm wrong, you'll tell me I'm wrong. But every bit of research I've carried out, and I've looked into this a lot of different ways, the suspect in the Golders Green attacks is a guy called Essa Suleiman. As far as I can tell, anti-Semitism didn't have anything to do with what happened in Golders Green last week. It would appear that this man has a history of very serious mental health problems and had attacked a police officer once, he had stabbed a dog, he had attacked neighbours, he had attacked passers-by, and he'd been in and out of psychiatric care for some time. Would I be right? And is that what your research is telling you, that this guy...
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead, jump into it.
Well, look, this is a whole aspect which the mainstream mess avoids, which is looking at mental illness and particularly the drugs that are used to fob off people who come to doctors worried about mental illness. And one of the most important aspects to understand about this is the use of antipsychotic and antidepressant drugs, which I've just recently got a pretty good briefing on by people that know about such things. Now, these drugs are highly addictive, and in, even though the official figures are less, in at least 10% of cases, they cause aggression. So, you know, if you're thinking that having an antidepressant means you're going to be smiling and chill all the time, no. Many, many people, because basically what it does is it kind of switches off your emotions. The idea is that's what the drug is designed to do. And people I've spoken to that have had antidepressants describe a strange feeling kind of going up their body, up their spinal cord, into their brain and switching their emotions off. So this is obviously going to have an interesting and important effect on people. And many of the individuals that we've seen doing various attacks like this, and I would say, you know, it may well have an anti-Semitic element to it. These Jewish people may have been random, you know, but it may have been deliberately aimed at them for whatever reason. Apparently the guy is linked to the Somaliland Liberation Front, or whatever they're called, who are trying to get independence for Somaliland. And it may be that they see Jewish people as the big obstacle to that. And they may even be right about that. But the point is, it was absolutely extraordinary, as we discussed on our program on Friday, to see this absolute hysteria sweep the press. Why do I describe it as hysteria? Well, the previous week, a guy had been stabbed at a pro-Iranian march in central London. It wasn't reported anywhere in the London press. For all those billions of pounds worth of reporters and printing presses and transmitters, nowhere, and internet websites, nothing was reported about this stabbing of an Iranian guy. And the only report was the week after, which was the week of the Golders Green attack. That was in the Evening Standard. It was about three paragraphs saying that the guy had been, who was another Iranian, who's anti-Muslim or the Islamic Revolution in Iran, had appeared in court charged with the stabbing. The other thing is it was an Iranian guy who stopped this maniac stabbing at Golders Green. That was an Iranian that actually stopped him attacking somebody else, and he was attacked earlier that day. He attacked a Muslim earlier that day. So what you've got here is an obvious maniac, possibly being badly medicated to actually make his mental illness worse, and then sort of wandering around the streets, attacking one Muslim, attacking two Jews, and this is supposedly all because there is this sweeping organization out there that hates Jews and hates Israel because both are the same. Now, look, this is completely insane, and think about how Starmer got his job. He got his job through the fake anti-Semitism claims against Jeremy Corbyn. And this is part of his bread and butter. This is what got him his work. Mandelson got his job on the back of this. Morgan McSweeney got his job. And Rachel Reeves got her job. All of the senior members of the current cabinet, so-called running this country, all got their work and their positions based on fake claims of anti-Semitism against Jeremy Corbyn, and also fake claims to be, you know, left-wing during the 2024 general election campaign. And alongside those MPs that won in 2024, there sits something like 80 or 100 special MPs that Mandelson chose to replace the candidates that local parties wanted. So what you've got now is a Labour Party which has got a whole swathe of new pro-Israeli MPs, including the guy who's a Kingswood MP in Bristol. His gay boyfriend, is a former employee of, actually he's his husband, of the Unit 8200 Israeli Intelligence Service. That was one of the new MPs that Mandelson decided to put in there. So, this is, I'm trying to give you a picture which is completely opposed to this anti-Semitism sweeping the country. I don't think it is at all, Richie.
Yeah, on last week's programme, I spent a bit of time, so I used a couple of language models to do a deep dive into crime statistics over the last 20, 25 years.
Oh, yes.
And it would appear that, no, there is absolutely no trend towards anti-Jewish bigotry or crimes against Jews. What's interesting is the Community Security Trust, which purports to be a charity. I've tried to call it out a few times. I've actually contacted the Charity Commission privately to ask them to justify it. Could they justify to me how this organisation could have charitable status? For our listeners who don't know what it is, the Community Security Trust is a Jewish organisation that raises money to provide security outside Jewish schools and synagogues. Now, most of its funding comes from UK central government, which is really interesting. So it gets £28 million a year, usually from the UK government, right? That's the kind of, it's a massive amount of money. Now, my contention is that this is the mafia in New York.
The chair of the CST is a convicted fraudster, Gerald Ronson.
Yeah, I was coming to that.
He owns thousands of forecourts in Britain where you buy your fuel. So he's the sort of middleman between the big oil.
Well, do you know what it is, T?
The motorist.
Do you know what it is? It's a protection racket. So this is what the mafiosa would have done in New York in the 1940s and 50s and even earlier. They would have gone to businesses and told them, listen, there's a boogeyman out there who wants to destroy your business. But if you pay me money or you solicit donations for this charitable trust, we'll protect you. And what's amazing is much of the justification for the British government funding actually comes from the CST's own data. So the CST, as well as raising money to put security guards on Jewish schools and synagogues, is also spending a lot of time on social media looking for hurty words where people might say something anti-Zionist or even anti-Jewish to put all this in. So long story short, and then you come back in, long story short is the data says that there's been no rise in genuine criminal activity against Jews, which is, you know, somebody standing in the street and hurling insults, or somebody assaulting a Jew, or somebody vandalizing Jewish property or cemeteries. That hasn't changed in years. It's not happening. What they're claiming, the basis for their claim that Jews are running scared in the UK is basically what's being said on social media. Not to put too fine a point on it, it's a load of bollocks is what it is. Go ahead. What it is?
Well, look, social media can be all sorts of things, can't it? It can be AI driven. AI bots can be saying these things, and they can be tasked with a job of finding tens of thousands of Facebook groups or Twitter feeds to plaster their AI driven nonsense around. And nobody's the wiser. Elon Musk doesn't seem to really care about this misuse of the platform, and I'm sure Zuckerberg doesn't either. So, but it could also be paid individuals who are paid to put complete nonsense. And I've seen this in the past, news stories where I've thought, looked at it and thought, well, hang on, that looks to me like a bot is saying that on Facebook, and you're positing it as a news basis of a news story. You know, so this is, I think they're getting they're getting pretty desperate on this one. And, I keep seeing that the police commissioner, I mean, the most worrying aspect to me of all of this is to see the police actually getting very political. This is what happens in police states. Mark Rowley, the Met commissioner, should be staying well out of any of the policy proposals. That's not his job. It's Shabana Mahmood and Starmer, you know, the Home Office and the Prime Minister, who should be making any pronouncements. And if he as a policeman can't convince these people to say what he would like to say, then he should keep his mouth shut. The same exact thing, of course, is happening with Tampon Charlie over in the States, making murmurings about how much he supports Trump's. You know, these positions, whether it's Met Chief Constable or King, are traditionally apolitical. And it's not just a tradition. If they start becoming politicized, then we will have either a tyranny instead of a democracy in terms of the king being in charge, or a police state with Rowley running the show.
You have to take Trump's word for it, though, that Charles indicated that he supports the action in Iran, because he hasn't said it, at least not in public anyway. Trump is a stone-cold liar, a pathological liar. So we don't know what Charles did.
Well, to be fair to you, right, they didn't show Charles's face when he said this. The camera was just on Trump at the congressional dinner last week. And there was no, knowing Trump, he probably did say this behind the scenes. I think it's highly likely that Charles did say that. And what he appears to have said, if there's a very good article about the breach of protocol The Independent produced last week, which is Trump talking about what was discussed behind closed doors, which he's not allowed to do. He's not supposed to do that. But it's pretty clear that that Charles did say something. And what he said, it seems, is that he agrees that there is a serious problem with the Iranians who are enriching uranium too much. So this is Charles weighing in. I mean, I honestly think you have to... you're right, of course. If it's not said in public, it's just said by Trump, you know. But I would suggest that unless the palace issues an enormous denial of some sort, that is what happened behind closed doors. This, of course, is exactly what you'd expect in this country, where you've got a prime minister that says he's not supporting the Iran war, and yet he's allowing the Americans to use the Fairford Air Base. He's using British RAF jets for reconnaissance to aid the Israelis, etc.
Tony Gosling is our guest, live from the Cotswolds, thisweek.org.uk, the wonderful Cotswolds. Jeremy Bowen, international editor for the BBC, writing this afternoon on the BBC website, says that the ceasefire in the Gulf is showing its age because of skirmishes in the last couple of days. The US and Iran's determination to keep the pressure on each other has put the ceasefire in serious jeopardy. It's a dangerous moment, he's saying. He says that this standoff in the Strait of Hormuz raises the risk of things sliding back into an all-out war. Just before you come back in, our listeners might not be aware, the US government has talked overnight about maybe shepherding or escorting ships that are currently stranded in the Strait, so giving them a military escort out of there, which might, of course, obviously lead to something very serious happening. Do you share Jeremy Bowen's fear that this might slide back into the starting up of the bombing of Iran again and all that goes with that, Tony?
Definitely. I don't think this is going away. My understanding is that the only reason there's been a ceasefire is because they've run out of Patriot missiles, these interceptor missiles.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, and once they rebuilt their stocks, they've got the production lines churning away. I think Volkswagen in Germany are also converting, or in the process of converting one of their factories to producing Patriot missiles. They're desperate to restock. And once they've restocked, I think they'll just start hammering Iran again.
This is interesting, this. If they stopped because they needed to replenish, that's a plausible argument. They may well have done. What about this threat I don't believe it for a minute, but the threat by the US to withdraw troops and end its base presence in Germany after the German Chancellor apparently said the whole episode has been embarrassing for America. What do you think of that?
Great. Fine. Cheerio. I don't think there's that many Germans going to be completely complaining about that.
The government doesn't seem to want them to go, though, does it? I mean, like,
well, it's the protection racket you were talking
about.
Yeah,
it's a protection racket, yeah.
You know, do you really want these people there? I mean, the irony of this, pointed out by my colleague Martin Summers on Friday, is if they do withdraw these troops, they probably won't be going back to the States. They'll be coming to Britain, because Britain is the country which is most obsequious towards the United States and is quite happy for them to station as many troops here as they like. And that should, you know, maybe for some of your older listeners, that will take you back to Duncan Campbell's books from the 1980s, where he interviewed various people behind the scenes in the British military, who explained that if there was any kind of serious, like, escalation, war escalation, that the United States would be controlling Britain anyway. They would have their people in charge of our counties, much of our military, etc. That book was, I think, was called War Plan UK, which was at the time was a bombshell. People didn't realize that the Americans were in that sort of position. He did another book, very similar one, just after, I think it was after, called The Unsinkable Aircraft Carrier. And, you know, the American domination of Britain has been behind the scenes. Maybe they've only just tail end of last year, it seems, if you talk to the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament, brought in a whole bunch of these B-61, I think they are, atomic bombs, and they're storing them in East Anglia for the first time for a couple of decades. So the Americans just, I mean, we are, we just have to do whatever the Americans tell us to do. And not only that, the F-35 jets we use now and our Trident submarine and missile systems are all controlled by the Americans. So if the British start doing something the Americans don't want with that weaponry, then they just flick a switch in the States at the Pentagon and it falls out of the sky or sinks or whatever, you know. So we are totally beholden to the Americans now.
On the impacts, the other impacts, the financial, the economic impacts from the situation in the Middle East, the terrorism on the part of the US and Israel against Iran and Lebanon, on the impacts, the Telegraph reported this afternoon that airlines have cancelled 13,000 flights scheduled to run in May this month. And they reckon, and to be fair, the Telegraph's travel correspondent, who isn't Simon Calder, he's the Independent. The guy who does it for the Telegraph is pretty good. He reckons Brits who have booked flights to get out of the country at half term might very well be affected by it. I hope you're not planning to fly anywhere.
This is another symptom, isn't it?
Yeah.
Of actually what is going on. I mean, I've spoken to several people, said fairly switched on friends of mine in Bristol, saying, well, Trump seems to have declared war on Britain. Never mind Iran. I mean, this is an economic war, isn't it? I was just looking earlier on at John Seymour's book. I can't remember the title of it, but he wrote famously in the 70s. He was a bit of a guru about self-sufficiency and teaching people with reasonable sized gardens how to, like, the good life, you know, how to grow your own food in your own garden, this sort of thing. But he did do a book about I think it was called The Countryside Explained. And in a whole section of that, he talks about a farm where he did his training back in the 1950s, which used no fertilizer and no tractors. It just used manure from horses and bullocks. And they had a mixed farm. I think he said it was 400 acres. And so if you wanted to survive after the closure of the Straits of Hormuz, when there's no petrol for your tractor and no fertilizer for your ground, you need to go back to that system with using horses and using manure from the livestock to fertilize the land. And you can grow just as much, 2 tons of grain an acre, I think it was, as people do nowadays on fertilizers. And fertilizers kill the soil. Anyone that knows anything about farming or ecology will know that if you go across a most modern grain field areas like Lincolnshire, etc., you know, Norfolk, places like that, you will find that because of their regular use over years of fertilizers, the soil is virtually dead.
Dead. Yeah.
You know, when it dries out, the soil cracks open. There's really very little organic matter left in there. And
You know what they call it? It's called abiotic stress. I used to talk about this all the time. It's called, check out the big brain on the baldy gammon there, getting something right for the first time all day long. Yeah, and of course...
Yeah, so we need to go back to that sort of system, don't we? You see what I mean? If this... We've been made dependent on things like fertilizer and oil, and so we just need to remember, you know, hopefully the community memory is still there from a couple of generations ago as to how we used to do it before we were sent down that road.
I'll give you a phone call in 6 months' time or a year to ask you to come on the programme, and you'll tell me you've got some oxen and you've got a yoke and you've got to plough that yonder field there about 7:30 p.m. or something, and you can't come on the programme. No, this isn't funny. And by the way, the abiotic stress, I have the wackiest conspiracy theory of all time. It is deliberate, and horrible biotech companies like Monsanto, they patented these horrible Franken seeds that work in abiotic stress and yield only one crop because they don't germinate. They don't seed. Yeah, they produce seeds that will grow crops, but then you can't sow seed from the crop. I mean, it's beyond evil. I'm not going to get into geoengineering with you because I know how upset you get when people bring it up. So I'm not going to get into that.
No,
I'm taking the piss out of you. But on a serious note, this is where...
That's a tangent, isn't it? But look, you know, what you're talking about here, talking about evil, this is what the press never do. The mainstream press, in fact, much of the alternative press never do talk about evil. They don't really look at this in this with the spiritual dimension. And you have to, I'm afraid. You look at the whole Hormuz situation now, where first of all, the Iranians closed the Straits of Hormuz. Then the Americans closed the Straits of Hormuz. And then the Iranians reopen it. And then the Americans reopen it for about a day. And a couple of tankers try to go through. And then the Americans close it again. And so this is it's a sort of mirroring going on. It's almost like a game here. And it's quite clear that this is many thousands of miles away from the United States. It's damaging the entire planet. And yet nobody really dares in Europe stand up to the Americans and say, get out of there. Or more particularly, as a diplomatic position in favor of the Iranians' ability to control their own straits, you know, which is an obvious thing. But then they're too scared to even do anything. That is to send some sort of military signal to the Americans either. So this is, you're right. I mean, they've got to the stage now where they have an absolute vice-like grip. And I don't think that the Americans really control their own country, the American people either. You've got this Pax Judaica and the Israel lobby have an absolute vice-like grip on US politics, or they certainly seem to have. And so what way I see this in terms of just chatting about this to some friends the other day is if you think about 2000 years ago and the advent of Christ, you know, this little Jewish boy is a bit of an upstart and he pokes his finger in the eyes of the rabbis in Jerusalem, or not, you know, metaphorically, and causes a bit of a fuss. And then he gets crucified and then he comes back, right? Quite an interesting little tale to tell. A lot of people were telling it. It's called the gospel, the good news, etc. But what's happening now and what's happened since 1948 is a satanic inversion of this. That is to say, creating a state which denies the existence of Christ, as the Israeli state does, as he's not the Messiah. And what they're doing is they're now spreading this denial as far as they can around the world and taking over countries and coercing them to this idea. And so, you know, I just think it is a satanic inversion of what Christ did 2000 years ago. That's what the British have facilitated in the Balfour Declaration. And it's what the Zionists have created ever since Herzl and the Zionists kicked this all off in the 1880s.
I think, is it fair to characterize your take on this? And you know where you are, right? That first of all, I love you. I love having you on, and you'll get all the time in the world to lay out your answer. But I get a lot of stick sometimes when after you've been on, most of it is good. You know, I enjoyed what Tony said today. I agree or I disagree, but my listeners follow you. I mean, you're one of the more successful radio presenters in the independent media, and they follow you with great interest, as they should do. It's an excellent program. And is it right to say that you're not convinced that an agenda has existed for a long time to take humanity down this very dark totalitarian path where ultimately we end up in some sort of digital or some sort of transhumanist type of prison type of thing. Because I came around to believe that my eyes don't deceive me, that it is happening and that maybe it is an agenda that was desired and has been around for a long time. What's your take on that? It's a huge question.
No, definitely. I mean, look, I talked about the 1880s there. It probably goes back further than that even. But I mean, you can see the beginnings of a formulation of a plan for the Zionists to create their own movement, to destroy other parts of Judaism, to make the Zionists the very, very most powerful. I mean, and obviously Hitler and the concentration camps were a part of that. In the 1930s, there was a big program, the Havara Agreement in Germany, to persuade, gently actually to begin with, persuade Jews to go to Palestine.
To relocate.
To help them to do it, to get out of Europe. But that, of course, was only something which Jews who had Zionist leanings of some sort would do. I mean, they didn't, you know, most Jews didn't want to do that. So the ones that didn't want to, well, we know what happened to them.
Yeah.
Millions of them were put into labor camps. Many of them were deliberately exterminated. You know, this was the program. So, I mean, to me, it seems obvious looking at history that there was a plan to bring us to where we are today. I mean, to what extent people like Musk and Musk's grandfather with Technocracy Incorporated, because remember, there were a whole bunch of pro-Nazis down in South Africa during World War II. This was the one part of the British Empire which was safe for pro-Nazis. You know, I think it was Bermuda or Barbados.
Yeah, that's right.
That Edward VIII was sent over to. But there were a whole load of them down there. And many of them, and some of Thiel's ancestors are connected to the South African group of Technocracy Incorporated. So, I mean, I think they've been seeding this for quite a while. And it seems to me it's almost like if you wanted to go back in history further than that, all you need to do is look at the medieval crusades. I mean, this was a very peculiar movement run by the Templars who were created by the Vatican. They were the leading lights, both financially and militarily, in that whole operation. They were using the same sorts of psychological warfare, like the letter of Prester John, for example, which was a whole load of rubbish, lies, but it was spread all around Europe to say to the aristocracy, look, we've got some other Christians are fighting against the Muslims. We need to go down and fight this side to help them, you know. But it was all just complete rubbish. And, you know, thousands of very wealthy people in medieval times believed it, so they went to help, in medieval times. And that was another attempt, I think, to basically steal the holy real estate and to set up their own kind of empire to compete with this, the gospel. And, you know, that it might sound strange that the Vatican would be behind that, but I think many people that know about the origins of the Roman Empire and the Roman Church in the Roman Empire with Constantine just setting out really to try and control Christianity rather than to accept it, would understand that's what the Templars were all about. This is an anti-Christian organization designed to pretend to be a Christian. I mean, they weren't at all. They were drunkards. They were very, very violent. And they were involved, I think, in satanic rites, which was exposed by the French king. And if you really want to look at, you know, how this sort of stuff extends through history, hundreds of years after the arrest of Jacques de Molay, the Grand Master of the Templars, by the French King Philip the Fair, hundreds of years after, the Templars got their revenge in the French Revolution with all of the bloodlines that went back to Philip the Fair getting their heads chopped off on the guillotines in an extremely violent and bloody fashion. So I think this faction is out there. It's a sort of death cult, really. And we're seeing it starting to play out. And I don't think they would have any compunction about using a nuclear false flag or killing anybody. Their one big prize is not money. It's not oil. It's the media. They want to control the news media. They want to control what we see and hear. They want to control our perceptions and our minds.
Well, when you see the media behaving as one in, just take, for example, I mean, it happens whatever the subject is, but if you take what happened last week the media moving in one direction, nobody questioning the mental health of the guy, the information that was already out there. All of the main news anchors were doing the gotcha questions to politicians, you know, asking them, well, does the river to the sea, does that mean kill Jews and all of this sort of stuff. You'd imagine that the media has been captured a very, very long time ago. We saw that during COVID. Name one mainstream media outlet that dared to challenge the legitimacy or the sense of the lockdowns. I mean, they all colluded to keep Ivy League professors off the air. Professors who said the lockdown's a dangerous thing. It'll be worse than it's worse. It's a cure that's worse than the disease.
To be fair, Alison Pearson in the Telegraph, and there were just a few. But yeah. You're right. I mean, you know, overwhelmingly, the whole thing was a massive sorrow.
Rinse and repeat. Yeah.
So that's exactly what's going on, I think, with this. I mean, it's like the anti-Semitism bullshit that was going on within the Labour Party is now going on nationally with the key protagonist, Keir Starmer. It was going on about that the whole time. He's one of the only ones of the most left in power. Hopefully not for long after this week's local elections, leading the charge, you know. So this is really just a psyop. It's a kind of the emperor's new clothes, but it is actually getting very serious. I mean, we're not really thinking and talking much about what's been going on in Ukraine and Russia, are we? Because of much of this, you know, it's what is called propaganda, steering all the news media to look at something in the wrong direction. I think that's Brian Eno's term.
It is indeed.
Russia has said last week, Medvedev said, we may attack Britain, we may attack France, we may attack Germany and Poland anytime. And this is the company that we're going to be destroying. I can't remember the name of the business, but they're producing the drones for the Iranians, who've just, again, over the last couple of days, done some massive attacks right into the center of Russia with these drone swarms flying over and then killing loads of their targets are generally industrial rather than military, just industrial. So they're trying to do like knock out power plants, things like that. But there's lots of collateral damage in the center of Russia due to these drone attacks. And the Russians are basically, well, Medvedev is saying, we know this is not Ukraine doing this. This is you. Yeah. And so if you carry on doing it, we're going to hit you. But this has got hardly any coverage whatsoever. I mean, this is a nuclear power that the British are poking.
It sounds to me, what Medvedev said sounds more like kind of maintaining morale back home than any serious threat. Russia's not going to attack the UK, is it?
Well, you want to believe. You should get one of those T-shirts. I want to believe. You know, look, this is what else can the Russians do other than tell you, look, if you're not, you know, we are now considering attacking you. One very good sign that they are is the massive scaling back of their victory parade this week in the center of Moscow. They've decided that they're going to have virtually zero military hardware. It's going to be really, really, in a way, this is quite chilling. The Russians love doing this. You know, they enjoy having all their military going backwards and forwards in Red Square. And, you know, all the troops saluting Putin or whatever. This year they've decided no.
What would it look like, Tony? Tony, hang on. What would a Russia attack on the UK look like?
I think they would be attacking industrial military facilities here, which are being used to produce drones, which are going over to Ukraine. So that, I think, and also any sort of intelligence, military centres, which are, such as, for example, Menwith Hill in North Yorkshire, which may well be relaying information from satellites about targeting, which is then being used by the Iranians. So Tulsi Gabbard, just after Trump got elected, said, no, we're not going to help the Ukrainians with intelligence anymore. But they clearly are. These American satellites are still being used. Probably her arm's been twisted by Hexeth or somebody else. But anyway, this is a deadly serious situation which we are encouraging here. And of course, again, in the United States, Tampon Charlie is going on and on about how terrible the Russians are and how much the Europeans want to cooperate with the Americans in helping Ukraine. Now, what on earth is he talking about? Ukraine is gone. It's totally taken over by this little MI6 gay dancer called Zelensky, and he you know, he is destroying his country. He's destroying all of his young men, and the entire place is becoming the scene of a proxy war that NATO and the Americans have always wanted to have with the Russians. The Russians know all of this, Richie. It's just a question of when. Far as I'm concerned, if the NATO carry on as they are, by just bit by bit having strikes further and further into Russia, taking, you know, more and more Russian lives, at some point the Russians will just hit us. That's what they'll do. And they'll say, well, we told you so. And then you'll say, oh, maybe you were right, Tony.
Oh, I'd be the first to say you were right, Tony. I've never been anything other than magnanimous when I'm wrong. And that's because I'm often wrong, Tony. And when you're often wrong, you become accustomed to magnanimity or something like that.
Well, I get things wrong too all the time. But you know what I mean? I don't make any claims otherwise. And I can tell that the Russians are getting really, really annoyed with the with NATO, and particularly with the British, who they see as behind this. And so Charlie the King is behind it. He's making it absolutely clear. His mum wouldn't have said these things. He is saying them, and he's leading it, and he's in a position to appoint the Chancellor of the Exchequer, the Prime Minister. Although we vote for them, he can say no, I'm not having this person. He makes sure that the people that he wants in key positions of military officers, police, chief constables, judges, etc., archbishops as well, by the way, are the people that he wants to sign the paper and say yes, please.
If he is as all powerful the emperor you think he is, maybe stop referring to him as Tampon Charlie. Maybe give that a rest.
No, I'm sorry. I'm not going to respect the emperor, just as I'm not respecting Trump. Do you know what I mean? This is not our king. Trump is not my emperor. Am I allowed to say that or not?
You can say whatever you want on this program. Listen, you said Starmer is toast. The local elections take place on Thursday. It's going to be wipeout, as the famous song went. What difference will it make, really? Who do you think, I mean, they're talking about Andy Burnham somehow forcing a by-election because some Liverpool MP might step aside for him. They're talking about Angela Rayner, the former minister for Chavs. She was the minister for Chavs, and we miss her dearly. Who do you think is likely to lead the Labour Party after Starmer?
Well, it's not easy to tell. As far as I can see, I've just got a dog has just come up over my
in the Cotswolds. What else?
Look, it doesn't make any difference. Nobody worthwhile is going to get in, are they? As far as I can see, the Labour Party is clearly in the situation where it wants Wes Streeting to take over, but you've got a bit of a civil war going on within the party itself amongst the MPs. The old ones, as I was talking about, the new ones that Mandelson put in will want Wes Streeting. The old ones won't want him. Will it be Burnham? Will it be Rayner? I don't honestly think it will make a tremendous amount of difference because all of these parties now are neoliberal parties. They're not going to change the direction of the ship. I don't think, unless somebody like Richard Burgeon, Clive Lewis, somebody like that, gets some sort of key position. But it may just be that by getting rid of Starmer, it will allow the Labour Party to actually decide for itself again. I honestly don't know, but I think Starmer is going to do everything he possibly can to cling on.
No doubt.
Right until the next general election. Remember, Rishi Sunak was being told many, many moons before the general election that he was not very popular. And actually he replaced Boris Johnson, who was popular. So the Conservatives, what they did is they got rid of the guy who would win them a general election in 24 and replaced them with someone that won't. So it seems to me there's all sorts of games being played, actually. And what really matters is whether we've actually got a criminal justice system that works. You know, I've looked at this today. We've just had this announcement about the Elbit people from Palestine Action who have been tried twice. So they were tried the first time for something called aggravated burglary.
Yeah.
Obviously, they weren't trying to burgle drones, right?
They're trying to smash them up,
obviously. Obviously rubbish. I mean, it does make you wonder if these, you know, how, why are the press, you know, allow nonsense like this to go? We're going to trust, we're going to prosecute them for aggravated burglary of drones that they're smashing up. What are they? You know, this is rubbish. But anyway, so they were acquitted by the jury on that. And so they're retrying them just for criminal damage. Now, this is wrong. You don't retry people because you failed to get a prosecution for them. This is called double jeopardy, and it's not allowed in the British court system. So this is just another example of how low this country is falling. And I mean, I think it's just, you know, it goes back to what I was saying really about Mark Rowley and political policing and the Home Office and the Crown Prosecution Service and the highest levels of the courts seem to be completely complicit with this whole Pax Judaica, which is the Israelis are right at all times. There is no right. And genocide apparently wasn't even mentioned, even though that was the reason they were in there smashing up these drones. So it does bother me, you know, that the political situation we've got at the moment with people like Lamy now, isn't he? The Bilderberger, he's a justice secretary, so he would have had a role in all of this. That the people from the Israel lobby are completely twisting our criminal justice system. And I would be very pleased, and I'm not holding my breath, I'd be very pleased if the old traditional pro-Palestinian MPs in the Labour Party can get rid of this lot straight away.
That's a good place to end it. David Lammy needs to use ChatGPT or Grok to help him tie his shoelaces. He's one of the dumbest politicians I've ever heard deliver a speech in all the time I've been covering politics, and you're a few years older than me. The guy is as dumb as they come, isn't he? And you have to be careful.
Can I just come in with a little tiny little snippet, which was, I don't know if you ever interviewed Peter Ford. He's the former ambassador to Syria. And he was a right-hand man to Galloway in his Workers' Party.
Didn't he write Galloway's for? Obviously taken. Didn't Ford also write for? He had a column in a paper one time, didn't he?
I think. Not sure, but anyway, he's extremely astute on all
good,
these matters.
Good guy, yeah.
I want to plug my interview I did with him last week about what's been going on. But he said something which really blew my mind, and that is that the reason for Mandelson's appointment as ambassador, would you like to hazard a guess?
The real reason for Mandelson's appointment as ambassador, well, the bullshit reason was that he was such a shrewd operator, he'd be able to keep a bit of a leash on Donald Trump. We know that was nonsense. So I won't hazard a guess. No, tell me. I couldn't imagine.
Come on. Yeah, but as I did, I said, well, maybe it was to try and control the outcome of the Epstein stuff, you know, from a diplomatic position.
Well, that's a good shout.
And that was a bit of a silly, naive thing to say.
No, it's not a bad shout.
Peter explained is, he said, the US ambassador is the creme de la creme of all of the British diplomatic service. And they have access to all the intelligence that flows between Britain and America. So the reason Mandelson was put there so he could copy and paste and photocopy and email all of that to Israel. That was why Mandelson had to get that job.
Because
he was spying for the Israelis.
Well, do you know what? As shrewd as Peter Ford is, and I do know who he is, and I have interviewed him a very long time ago, that doesn't make an awful lot of sense. If Israel controls US politics to the extent we believe it does, why would they need Mandelson to supply them with the information?
Well, look, they can steer both Britain and the United States. But when it comes to secret intelligence, they haven't necessarily got their people in there. I mean, you and I don't really know the extent to which MI6, MI5, GCHQ, the NSA, CIA are controlled and steered by the Israelis. There may still be independent forces. I mean, they are supposed to be like a CIA within the CIA, you know. So we don't know, really. But maybe the Israelis are just wanting to look at the little bits of information that they don't have access to.
Fair enough.
Which would be passing between Britain and America.
Let me give you two quick fire questions from listeners. Elizabeth is Dutch, but she's living in southern Spain. I've not heard of this now. Has Tony heard of the wildfires at three different military exercise grounds in the Netherlands that spontaneously happened last week? Have you heard? I haven't heard that.
No, I haven't heard anything about that, no.
Well, he will look it up, Elizabeth. I guarantee you when we finish this conversation, he will look it up. She's very shrewd, Elizabeth. She says there are three wildfires at different military installations in the Netherlands. They look suspicious. She asked you that. And the other question comes in.
Well, look, Elizabeth has reminded me of something else which has been happening, which is this trial of the Ukrainian firebombers of Starmer. I don't know if you've been following that. Very few people have.
As best as I can, really. It's
Crispin very difficult. Flintoff did a really good little report at the end of last week, and it's absolutely clear this is the Israelis too. As a Telegram channel, this guy called El Money has been paying people to distribute Islamophobic leaflets to get them printed and distributed all around London. And so the one people who have done that quickest and most efficiently, this is at least what the testimony has been coming out in this case. Once that people have been sort of tried out for doing that and they've done it successfully and they got their money. So the next job was firebombing a particular house and firebombing a car. So this is what's going on, is people are being paid via Telegram accounts or anywhere really just to go. And this is organized crime operating in London. But the motive seems to be quite obviously Israeli. Who else is going to be in there putting all these Islamophobic Tommy Robinson style leaflets out? So anyway, that was quite an interesting thing that's come out about that. I think George Galloway is totally barking up the wrong tree with all of his stuff about rent boys, and they may or may not be, but this seems to me...
It makes no sense to me either.
This is basically what it's about. It's an Israeli gangster op in London.
Galloway's turned into the greatest grifter there's ever been in the independent media, but that's just my opinion. And final question from Julie... who asks you, I will keep my opinion to myself here because I've had too much of a say, but Julie wants to know, she's not the only one actually, wants to know, what do you think of the interviews Candace Owens is doing exposing the Zionist control of the media? She's also been doing a lot of work on the Charlie Kirk assassination. I will keep my Candace Owens opinion for once to myself. What do you think?
Look, the media is controlled in many ways by pro-Zionist forces, most definitely. This is, like I said earlier, the big prize. We want to control the press. We want to control everything that people see, the narrative and the interpretation of world events. So if anything happens in Woodchester here in the Cotswolds, I can see it with my own eyes. But other than that, I have to look at the press to see what's happening around the world. Candace Owens, I think is another person I have an open mind on, like Tucker Carlson, quite similar. What is she exposing? She's exposing something I think we kind of know about, which is ownership of these transmitters and use of them.
Which we've been talking about for
the BBC
20 years.
Very much. But I can tell you one thing. When I was at the BBC, we had a senior producer, Kate Marsh, was parachuted in from outside the BBC. She wasn't a journalist and she was a Zionist, and she was parachuted over the head of the only person at our radio station that wasn't having to do what they were told by her was the news editor. So all the programs and all the appointments that then started being made by people like her were nepotism. It was nepotism. It was friends of hers, friends of friends. None of them, again, have been journalists. So I've seen with my own eyes, I've seen Zionist influence within the BBC spreading like a cancer, literally getting rid of real journalists and implanting their mates in those jobs. And if you look at the BBC and you wonder why it's a load of rubbish, that's why.
And if you wonder why so many of their political editors turn out to be Jewish, do I need to talk about Kunzberg and Nick Robinson and the current guy, Henry Zeffman, Jews everywhere?
And well, I can think of a few Jews who'd make excellent news editors.
For the BBC.
In fact, the news editor of Middle East Eye is Jewish. He's fantastic. Absolutely one of the best you'll ever find. Yeah. So it's actually about their pro or anti-Israeli leanings, really.
And I wasn't suggesting that every Jewish journalist in the UK is on board with Israel. But it does so happen. The BBC has an uncanny knack of putting Jewish people in there. ITV as well, with Robert Peston. The most irritable bastard ever to open a microphone,
but
Robert Peston.
He's absolutely useless.
Yeah.
But put David
fucking
Hurst
useless.
In charge as Director General of the BBC, you'd see the weight lift off the country overnight.
Thanks for today. Really appreciate it, pal. With everything that was going on here today, I wanted to get your take on it. Tony's interview with Peter Ford, you'll find it on thisweek.org.uk. Follow Tony on Twitter. Follow him on Facebook as well. And the show goes
I've got
out.
An app as well. But the app,
I mentioned
which
the app
you can even hear Richie's show on.
which is really kind of you, by the way. It's really kind. This
live.
It's fantastic. No, I appreciate that.
I'm competing with you, Richie. I want your listeners.
What you're doing is you're platforming me. You're putting me in front of more people, and I really appreciate that, pal. So thank you. Great to have you on today. Thisweek.org.uk, as I do every
Cheers,
Friday.
Richie. God bless.
And you too, mate. Bye for now.